Scuffles break out between Dutch police and demonstrators for a second night in a row as anger mounts over the government's COVID-19 measures. The WHO warns that Europe could see 500,000 more COVID-related deaths by March next year unless urgent action is taken. And Lebanon's Hezbollah movement condemns Britain's decision to blacklist the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas as a terrorist group. Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in to World News. In our top story, a scuffles break out in the Netherlands as protests against the government's new coronavirus restrictions continue for a second straight night. Now, latest footage shows clashes between police and protesters in The Hague. Thousands of people also took to the streets in the capital, Amsterdam, despite strong security presence. This follows an outbreak of violence on Friday night in Rotterdam. Three people were injured in the city after police fired shots and water cannons to disperse angry demonstrators. Dozens of people were also arrested. Similar anti-lockdown protests were also held in other European countries on Saturday, including Denmark, Croatia, and Austria.
Tens of thousands take to the streets of the Austrian capital ahead of the nation's fourth general lockdown, affecting the vaccinated and unvaccinated alike.
This is just one of several rallies taking place across the city just the day after the government announced that vaccinations will become mandatory from February.
Around 2 million of the country's 9 million residents have refused to get vaccinated.
I've not been vaccinated, and I believe this is a bluff on the part of the government. They want to put people under pressure. When vaccination becomes mandatory, I will stay at home. I believe everyone should be able to make their own choice.
I'm here because I'm against the vaccination for everybody. I want to decide myself. It's my body, and so I don't want to tell anyone to me that I have to go to vaccination.
The federal government has blamed the right-wing opposition Freedom Party, the FPÖ, for fueling public anger at a time of national crisis. Police forces confirmed that right-wing extremists, including convicted neo-Nazis, had taken part in the rallies, which remained largely peaceful, despite several instances of clashes and arrests. Austria is now reporting well over 15,000 new infections a day, with the total death toll almost reaching 12,000 people. Health experts say without compulsory vaccinations, the country will only stumble into new lockdowns every 3 or 4 months. Homolesky, Vienna.
Political commentator Lajos Szászdi says the European governments have to restrict their people's liberties due to the coronavirus pandemic.
It's a matter of a new variant of the virus that is evolving, and then you have to combine somehow juggle between liberties and the need of people to go out and go to a restaurant, especially now that Christmas is coming. But then there are other problems, like winter, that because of the cold weather, probably this virus is going to, some people say that if the virus comes from a certain kind of weather, then the opposite kind of weather is going to be, I'm not a biologist, but a cold weather might make people stay indoors, stay home, but then, I don't know, that could be like a source of incubation for the virus. In any case, the thing is
keep the windows closed.
There's like a baseline. People got to get vaccinated. People got to continue with social distancing. People got to use masks. And if you have relaxation, so people are not that careful, I mean, those that haven't vaccinated themselves at all, or they only have one vaccine, that is the problem. And that's the argument in the United States, that they say that there's like 30% people that haven't vaccinated, and the amount of deaths, the increases are in that kind of the population. So it's difficult. It's difficult when you and people want liberty, freedoms, but at the same time, governments have to take this as a public a health measure, a matter of life and death. So it's quite difficult, yes.
The World Health Organization has expressed concern over rising COVID figures across Europe agency has warned that some 500,000 people could die by March next year unless urgent action is taken to stem the spread of the virus. The WHO believes impending a winter season, low vaccination rates, and a faster spreading Delta variant of the virus contribute to the surge. Warning comes as several European nations have posted record caseloads and announced a partial or full lockdowns. A new German government is taking shape with incoming Chancellor Olaf Scholz promising equal number of women and men in his cabinet. A coalition of center-left Social Democrats, Greens, and fiscally conservative Free Democrats are holding talks on selecting a new cabinet members. Coalition officials say an agreement on portfolio distribution is likely to be reached in the coming week. Scholz is set to nominate three women from his own party for cabinet posts, including incumbent Environment Minister Savinia Scholz to run the Economy Ministry. Incumbent Labor Minister is also set to keep his post due to his strong performance during the pandemic. Social Democrats nearly won the federal election in September by beating Chancellor Angela Merkel's Conservatives. The UK's move to label the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas as a terrorist organization is drawing widespread condemnation. The Palestinian Authority says the UK took the measure at Israel's behest. It says the designation is unjustified aggression against the Palestinian people and will hamper reconstruction efforts in the besieged Gaza Strip. Hamas has also condemned the UK's move as a crime against Palestinians.
The British Home Office's decision to consider Hamas a terrorist organization is a crime against our Palestinian people and all their history of a struggle, as well as a condemnation of the legitimate struggles of all free peoples against colonialism. This decision, if implemented, is considered a great political, moral, and legal sin committed by Britain, in addition to its first crime of establishing the Zionist entity and making the Balfour Declaration.
Hamas spokesman said that Britain's move encourages the Israeli regime that is pardoned to continue its atrocities against Palestinians. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah has also condemned the British decision. Iran has denounced Britain's measure as well, with Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian saying that Palestinians' rights cannot be trampled on by distorting facts. The UK decision adds the political wing of Hamas to an existing ban on the movement's military wing.
The UK government has announced plans to declare the entirety of Hamas as a terrorist organisation. In a move led by Home Secretary Priti Patel, supporters of the group could face up to 14 years in jail under plans announced on Friday.
Previously, it was just the armed wing of the Palestinian organization, which had been prescribed under the Terrorism Act 2000. However, the new ban will also include the political wing of the group, which currently serves as the democratically elected government in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Following the announcement, criticism came in thick and fast online. Patel's close relationship with Israel was one of the main points raised.
It's not really a surprise, considering where this prescribing is coming from. Look at the UK. Look at the UK. It's an imperial power that refuses to acknowledge the damage caused by its empire's past. You know, how many countries have had to struggle against the United Kingdom for their own independence? So it's no shock that this prescribing statement is coming from the UK government, and it's no shock that it's coming from this current Home Secretary, Priti Patel, who, do not forget, once tried to give international aid money to Israel's army.
Why such a thing would happen? And the only sort of explanation is when you look at the Home Secretary's history, that she actually undermines the procedures and policies of British government, her own country, and had a secret meetings with the then Prime Minister Netanyahu. And she was removed because of that. So she has actually shown she's more willing to do things against British interests and in British policy in support of the State of Israel.
Israel welcomed the move as a significant decision. while Hamas accused the UK of supporting the aggressors at the expense of the victims. But the move would require approval by Parliament first. A prescription order has been introduced, with debates and a vote expected to follow. If passed, the law will come into force on November the 26th. Robert Carter, Press TV, London.
The Yemeni army has announced a large-scale military operation deep into Saudi territory in response to the kingdom's escalating attacks against the impoverished country. The Yemeni army spokesman said that 14 drones were used in the retaliatory attack against targets throughout the Saudi kingdom. Yahya Ansari said the King Khalid base was struck in Riyadh, while King Abdullah International Airport and Aramco oil facilities were targeted in Jeddah. He added that military targets were also hit in the kingdom's Abha, Jizan, and Najran regions. Meanwhile, a Saudi-led coalition said it's carried out a major offensive in Yemen, targeting 13 areas in Sana'a, Sada'a, and Marib. Saudi Arabia has recently ramped up its war on Yemen, which it launched back in March of 2015 to reinstate a friendly regime there. Tens of thousands of Yemenis, most of them civilians, have been killed and millions more displaced since then. Yemeni activist and political commentator Hussein Abu-Khaiti earlier joined us from Sana'a to discuss the latest retaliatory attacks by Yemeni forces.
And to show you that the Yemeni army has actually carried out attack that have reached most of the Saudi land. That's why I think that this latest attack, it will, if we continue, if Sana'a continue this type of attack, I think that the war will come to an end. But if we continue to target after Saudi continuous attack and blockade on Yemen, I think that the Saudi actually will continue their war. That's why Yemeni army should keep targeting Saudi Arabia. And I think they must, at this point, repeat the attack against Aramco oil field like they did 2 or 3 years ago against Baqiq and Khurais in Saudi Arabia. Because if we have seen how many times those airports, especially Abha and Najran and Jizan, has come under Yemeni attack, but still Saudi still actually did not stop its war against Yemen. That's why many lives are lost every day, not only by the Saudi airstrike, but as well by the Saudi blockade, which has been tightened more since Biden has reached the White House. And I believe that Yemeni army is capable not only to launch 14 drones at once. I'm sure that in the coming days or weeks, we're going to see some strategic attack against Saudi Arabia involving tens or 20 to 50 drones and ballistic missiles.
Chile will hold general elections on Sunday to choose the country's next president, lawmakers, and regional council members. Nearly 15 million people are eligible to cast their ballots. Seven candidates are vying for the presidency, with recent opinion polls showing two front runners. One is Gabriel Boric, a congressman who represents a left-wing coalition and was leader of a student movement. Another main contender is José Antonio Kast from far-right Christian Social Front Coalition. He is a lawyer and former congressman. A runoff will be held December 9th if none of the candidates obtains an outright majority. Voters will also elect all 155 members of the lower house of Congress, 27 of 50 senators, and regional council representatives. Meanwhile, a U.S. court has acquitted a militia member of murder in the killing of two men during last year's protest against police brutality. Acquittal of the white teenager is causing mixed reactions. While some groups and politicians have welcomed the verdict, others see it as a failure of an already broken justice system. Cases drawing a national attention because it arises from the Black Lives Matter protest sweep which swept the U.S. last year.
Justice system in the U.S. in the spotlight after a Wisconsin court cleared homicide charges against white teenager Kyle Rittenhouse. He was in court over his fatal shooting of two men and injuring another during anti-racism protests in Kenosha, Wisconsin, in August 2020. The court ruled that Rittenhouse had acted in self-defense. It rejected the argument of prosecutors accusing the 18-year-old of provoking violence during the Kenosha rallies.
It's been a long day. It's been a long 3 weeks. We're very happy with the verdict. We're happy that the jury took the time, put in an incredible amount of effort.
Gun rights supporters welcomed the verdict, too. Former President Donald Trump also congratulated Rittenhouse and defended the shooting as self-defense. Republican lawmakers were happy, too, with Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson saying justice has been served. But others do not think so. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, a Democrat, believes to call the verdict a miscarriage of justice is an understatement. And the victims' friends say they are sad about what the system has done.
I am, like I said, not surprised at what happened here today, but I am heartbroken.
Several civil rights and racial justice groups denounced the verdict as a travesty. The American Civil Liberties Union says the trial highlights an urgent need for reforms to both police and the legal system. And gun control advocates warn the verdict could inspire a new wave of armed vigilantism. President Joe Biden, reacting to the verdict, says it leaves many Americans, including himself, feeling angry and concerned. But the jury has spoken.
I stand by what the jury has concluded. The jury system works, and we have to abide by it.
Biden wants everybody to be peaceful as people fill the streets across the U.S. to protest what they see as the failure of the justice system. Unrest broke out in some locations. Commentator Kyla Papuche says Rittenhouse's case shows increasing polarization in the U.S. and eroding trust in the government there.
It is also a foreshadowing of the deep division, the polarization that is increasing and getting worse in the United States. There is more growing apathy, distrust, and zero confidence in every thought facet of the state in the United States government, not just the judicial system.
Rittenhouse has also reignited debate about gun rights and the boundaries of self-defense in the U.S. As critics remain unconvinced and people are on the streets, the standoff over the American gun culture, racism, and vigilantism appears far from over.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Basij Islamic Revolution's Fruitful Tree. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. One of the obvious characteristics of Imam Khomeini was his foresightedness and acumen. He would make decisions whose accuracy and importance would be known later on. For instance, less than 10 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, he thought that in order to safeguard the revolution and the country, it was necessary to have an organized and trained body. Thus, the Imam issued the order of establishment of such an organization on November 26, 1979, which came to be known later on as Basij Mostazafan, or Volunteers of the Oppressed. Then, 10 months after this order, the Iraqi dictator Saddam, at the behest of his masters in Washington and Moscow, initiated an all-out aggression against Iran and the Islamic Revolution to overthrow the Islamic Republic system. In those days, the unique and faithful role of the Basij forces was revealed to all. Imam Khomeini said, "If we want to present a perfect manifestation of self-sacrifice, sincerity and love of God and Islam, who will deserve more than Basij and Basijis?" Dear listeners, the Basij Commemoration Week in Iran marks the countless selfless efforts of Basij Mobilization Force, which have been carried out for the elevation and honor of Iran. Stay with us for an exclusive feature on this great occasion. The outstanding characteristics of Basij forces caused Imam Khomeini and Ayatollah Khamenei to praise them and use lofty words and phrases to describe them. Perhaps the loftiest phrase that the two leaders of the Islamic Revolution have used is Shajareye Tayyebe, meaning pure and sweet-smelling tree. This has been adopted from ayahs 24 and 25 of Surah Ibrahim of the Noble Quran. There, God likens pure word to a pure tree whose roots are fixed in the earth while its branches are in the sky yielding fruit whenever God permits. Ayatollah Khamenei describes Basij forces with reference to these ayahs. "You Basijis are the sweet smelling and pure fruits of that tree which the great Imam planted. This fruitfulness will continue. Just as God says, have you now seen how God gave a parable of a pure word resembling a pure tree whose root is firm and whose branch is in the heaven, yielding its fruit every time by the permission of its Lord? When the field is favorable and ready and the seed is pure, that plant is not terminable. I mean that no factor can harm it. Basij is such a sweet-smelling and pure tree." According to Ayatollah Khamenei, the sapling of Basij, which had been planted by Imam Khomeini, absolutely for God's satisfaction, has turned into a strong and a sturdy tree with firm roots and ample branches that bears new fruits on different occasions. Basij has proved its unending potentials for solving intricate problems and removing various obstacles in every domain. This lofty status of Basij is originated in the divine virtues such as spirituality, sincerity, popularity, insight, religious awareness, submission to the leader, purity, humbleness, simplicity, inexhaustibility, and constant preparedness for every job. Basij has turned into a role model for other freedom-seeking nations. Today, Lebanon, Iraq, Yemen, Syria, occupy Palestine, Nigeria, and other places have learned the model of Basij in their fight against oppressive and colonialist regimes and elements. Principally, any person or group that works with pure intention for the sake of serving the poor and downtrodden masses, God will exalt it in the eyes of people. The characteristics of Basij were manifested during the 8-year holy defense in the best way. These characteristics continued after the end of the war in the form of helping the poor, assisting those hurt in different events, safeguarding the security of country, and health programs such as nationwide vaccination, etc. Currently, since the outbreak of coronavirus in the country, Basij forces have participated in a variety of activities to hamper the spread of the deadly disease and aid the low-income classes who have lost their job. Ayatollah Khamenei says, "Whenever there is a struggle, there is Basij. Struggle in the field of knowledge, struggle in the field of politics, struggle in the field of social activities, struggle in the vast field and great international arena. These struggles continue and will continue." Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader enumerates the features of this jihadist spirit, saying, "Work for God and as a duty, not forgetting the ideals, using all forces and capacities, relentless, inexhaustible, and enthusiastic effort, trust in the youth and belief in the principle of we can." Dear listeners, the important point about Basij is to preserve and bolster valuable divine characteristics. Ayatollah Khamenei keeps stressing strengthening of moral virtues to all youth, especially Basiji youth. He reiterates to them to work without expecting any reward or even encouragement. Like Imam Khomeini, he highlights the principle that a member of Basij should work only for God. Insight is another characteristic of Basij. Ayatollah Khamenei says, "Dear youth, dear Basijis, wherever that you are in the country, increase this insight day by day. Do not let some material needs and paltry issues prevent insight. Protect your insight and know your enemy. The enemy has various stratagems, and that nation will be successful which is not deceived." On the importance of acquiring modern sciences and technologies for Basijis, Ayatollah Khamenei says, "Basij should enter the arena of knowledge ahead of all. You should go and capture the unknown scientific vistas, technological vistas, and innovative vistas." In other words, he believes that Basij should be equipped with two tools of knowledge and faith in order to be helpful in diverse spheres of services to the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic Ummah. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, said, "I always envy of the sincerity and purity of Basijis and appeal to God to resurrect me with Basijis, as in this world I am honored to be a Basiji." We'll be right back.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Assalamu alaikum to the listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio for today's discussion are Sayyid Murtaza and Sayyid Mohsen. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
And Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
So today we want to talk about one of the recent achievements inside the Islamic Republic of Iran, and that is COVID-19 vaccine, known as Cov Iran Barakat. You know, really under different sanctions which are put on Islamic Republic of Iran, Iran has achieved producing, I mean, the mass production of these vaccination throughout Iran. And these mass vaccination program started from November, enjoying the domestically produced vaccine. So, Sayyid Murtaza, let's start with you, brother. It's really a shocking news for Iran and for the world, because it could produce its own national COV-Iran vaccine. Of course, there are also some other variations of vaccines inside Iran which are used, but still it is a very surprising achievement for Iran, isn't it?
Of course it is. You know, when it comes to the health and health issues, any medical achievements can be considered valuable.
That's right.
And at this time that most countries are experiencing a kind of very terrible outbreak of this terrible pandemic, COVID-19,
yes,
around the world, Iran has been one of the few countries that actually plan to produce its domestically produced vaccines.
Yes.
And Cov Iran Barakat was the first one. This has been considered by many medical scientists as a great achievement for probably two very significant reasons. First, Iran has been experiencing a kind of sanction that was imposed on Iran by America and other European partners,
yes,
to America.
Yes.
So, when sanctions are in place, you know that it's very difficult to have and keep your partnership with other nations.
Yes.
On the other hand, we have limitations,
yes,
domestic limitations. It shows that Iran was actually very much pressed by national and international, actually, sanctions.
Yes.
So when such an achievement was made,
yes,
and it was introduced to the whole world,
mm-hmm,
even America, medical institutes around the world didn't believe it.
Yes.
And they thought maybe it's just a kind of propagation or propaganda that Islamic Republic of Iran is making,
yes,
about its medical development.
Yes.
But a few times later, it was proved. It was seen and it was actually used,
yes,
by many other nations. And now Iran is ready to stage a new progress.
Yes.
And it is going to be exported to,
yes,
other countries.
And also the official, you know, scientific documents are being approved by WHO, I think. They're being sent. Okay.
Yeah, of course. And after like 14 months,
yes,
These medical researchers,
yes,
and all the papers have been sent to the international,
yes,
bodies to be viewed,
yes,
and it has been approved and confirmed.
Yes.
So we can see that based on those international and some kind of national limitations, Iran took a very firm step to produce that domestic vaccine. And
okay,
it has been considered not only by international but even by global institutes as a great achievement for the Iranian medical science.
And this has been it's been about a decade, for 10 years, we are under the harshest sanctions from the U.S. side, especially during Trump administration. Even the medical equipments have been, you know, sanctioned by the U.S. and its European allies, and nothing was sent to Iran. We could see that how much the people, especially those who have specific diseases in Iran, were suffering from lack of medicine in Iran. But this Cov Iran Barakat coronavirus vaccine, which is known to be effective more than 90%, you know, and this is a good one, I think, is a surprising news for us. Okay, Sayyid Mohsen, let's get to you, brother. So how did you find this achievement for Iran?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, it was a big achievement for Iran, and it has many, it gives us many lessons to learn, especially to the countries in the region that do not fear or have a fear of so-called superpowers, do not have any fear of the sanctions. Generally, the governments, they do not, go further because of the sanctions, or they do not do the things which is beneficial for themselves,
that's right,
for their own people, because of having the fear of the sanctions. Whereas we can see in the peak of the sanctions, Iran has made its own vaccine,
that's right,
which is very much effective as well.
Yes.
And on top of that, we can see only after 3 days, when the Irani-made vaccine was made publicly, the U.S. Department of Treasury dropped its sanctions from the medicines,
yes,
from sending the masks, vaccines and all those.
It was during Biden administration, yes. I think, yeah.
So basically, okay, before that, Iran was under the sanction, yes, that they cannot have any vaccination from outside the world.
Yes.
They cannot have any masks.
Yes.
I don't know the other equipments, medical, yes, equipments, but obviously the Iranian scientists and the Iranian nation, they have shown that they can do whatever they want. And I think that the sanctions have made them stronger, and they have no use anymore,
mm-hmm,
like the sanctions that are on the Iran. And this is also some of the analysis of some of the, we can say, people like in the West as well. They say sanctions are making Iran more powerful rather than weakening them.
Okay.
But on top of that, obviously there is a role of a leader in,
mm-hmm,
it, and that's very important.
Yes, yes.
Because from the beginning of the COVID, we can say when COVID was started, we can see that the leader, the supreme leader, has ordered his nation or the scientists to make their own vaccination and do not depend on others.
A foreign one.
And this,
right,
this is very important,
yes,
that you need to have someone who shows you the way,
yes,
the path. And on top of that, the blessing is that your nation listens to you,
mm-hmm,
and they obviously really do what you want.
Right.
So it's a two-way, basically, we can say, participation. And we can see this from the beginning of the revolution. Even before the revolution, when Imam Khomeini was there, obviously it was the Iranian nation who basically listened to his orders, and they started their activities according to what the leader was saying.
And medically speaking, Iran has achieved many developmental progress after Enghilab, after,
yes,
the Islamic Revolution. I could vividly remember that before Enghilab, most of the doctors and the physicians that were present in the offices in Iran were or Indian
foreigner
ones or the Pakistan ones, okay, from around the world. But after Islamic Revolution, Iran, we could see this boost of, presence of the university students in the field of medicine. And then, nowadays in Iran, in every city of Iran, you could find the best physicians, and specialists.
Yes.
Especially, for example, this city, we are producing program from the holy city of Qom, is the place of the outstanding, physicians and specialists on different, fields of medicine. And this is really an honor for the Islamic Republic of Iran to produce such generation of the people, young and faithful. But as you said, that's right, believing in yourself, in your talent and the power in order to produce, because the leader has said ban the vaccination from the US or Britain. This,
yes,
does not mean we oppose the foreign,
vaccine,
development. This means that we want to believe in ourselves, okay?
Yes.
And we believe in our vaccination.
And the way he just had,
yes,
the dose of the Iranian-made vaccine,
yes,
that was a big,
yes,
step, by a leader, confirming that whatever our scientists do, we,
yes,
believe in it.
Yes.
And there is no doubt in
and the trust that the Iranian,
yes,
people had on Barakat, vaccination was really fascinating. It's still going on. The mass vaccination is going on in Iran. Okay, Sayyid Murtaza, there have been also so many other vaccinations, the Razi vaccine, the Fakhra vaccine, but this Kof Barakat, become very much famous about Iranians. Do you believe, too, that the sanctions made Iranians to believe in themselves, too, more than before?
You know that necessity is the mother of invention.
Yes.
So we have to look into this proverb and sayings that if you are just coming under great limitations, and if you are taken to the corner, So there is only one way you can actually defeat and fight back, and that's your personal strength and personal beliefs and your own self-confidence. We have seen, for example, in the ring, we have two boxers. One has been taken to the corner and he's been beaten up. So there is only one way for him to defend himself, not only to defend himself, but also to defeat the opponent, is to refresh himself, go all the way back and review his ideas, opinions, before he was getting into the ring.
That's right.
So the same thing happened to the Iranian medical institutes. So when all these sanctions by international communities have been imposed on them, they had no choice other than believing in their own abilities, other than believing in their own human resource. So Iran, fortunately, is enjoying a great deal of, scientists.
Yes.
And the human resource is really a good part of it. So Iran used two things to produce this vaccine for the first time, and on top of all, it was Barakat COVID-19,
yes.
So as a vaccine. So it was the human resource that they were backed and supported by the political, religious officials. And also we had this great tech that
yes.
was that has been produced and developed over the past 42 years
yes.
after the revolution, in the year 1979.
Yes.
And it is known as the Islamic Revolution.
That's right.
So these two factors made the medical institutes in Iran and anyone involved in this process
mm-hmm.
very much successful to produce for the first time this Iranian vaccine.
And Iran has a rich history and legacy of producing vaccination. We know that all the infants that are born in Iran are vaccinated, by the national produced vaccines inside Iran. So there is a long history to important, vaccine research institutes in Iran, Pasteur and Razi, which of course Pasteur is a French word, getting back to before Enghilab, but it's still active, and Razi, after Enghilab. These are really great achievements that are made by Iranians. Okay,
one more point is that now Iran has been actually fighting back with different waves of this virus attack across the country. So again, many medical institutes around the world have been greatly surprised that how Iran actually fought back and controlled these waves of attacks.
That's right.
That is happening. And these days you can see we had this fifth wave of attack.
Yes.
And now Iran is boldly announcing that this attack, wave number five, has been under control.
Under control,
and
that's right.
They have also showed to the whole international communities that they are strongly able to control the wave number six,
yes.
and it's not going to happen.
Yes.
So it shows that producing vaccine was a great achievement,
yes.
but controlling different variants
mm-hmm.
is one point.
Yes.
Controlling different waves of attack is another thing.
Yes.
So I think Iran and medical scientists, institutes, all together made a great achievement.
Yes.
And I think that is a record that has been made
right.
by the Iranian officials in terms of medical development.
Especially if we just take a look at the Muslim lands, we could find rarely a country which has depended on, we can say, its own produced vaccination, and the Islamic Republic of Iran as an Islamic land is among these exceptions, Said Mohsen, isn't it? How much do you think these religious faith and belief had helped them in order to do so? I mean, have these independence, as a Muslim land, Islamic land?
Well, obviously, we know that being a Muslim, we should be, if you're at a status or if you're at the state, you have a responsibility.
Yes.
You need to think that you're the servant and you need to do your best.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the main idea of the Islam, that wherever you are, you must, strive for the best effort that or the best potential that you have. Obviously, you need to go for the best. And that's what we can see. Making a vaccine is not just for the Iran. Rather, we can see the scientists like Fakhrizadeh was behind the big projects. Why they were behind those projects, it wasn't because of just Iran. It was because of the Islamic Revolution. It was the belief that they have that we need to serve this community and we are the servants, because in the Islam we have this ideology that what you do, you need to put your all efforts. And if you put your all efforts, then that is the state where you are worshipping Allah while you are working as well.
Yes.
So there is this concept is there in Islam. Like if a student is studying, if he puts all his potential, he's at the same time when he's studying, he's at the same time worshipping Allah. Worshipping Allah does not mean to just pray, you know, five-time prayers and, you know, fasting. Yes. It's not like that. So, yes, Islamic beliefs are there. Obviously, the beliefs have a big, you know, effect on it. On top of that, you know, we believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and we always have hope of the best.
That's right.
So this hope always, and this ideology that he is always helping us, and you know we have this dependence on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You know, in the Quran also we have a verse where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said to the Prophet that if wa in tawallaw, if the whole world turns away from you, faqul hasbi Allah.
Yes.
You need to just say Allah is sufficient for me, and there is no god except Him. وَهُوَ رَبُّ الْعَرْشِ الْعَظِيمِ and he's the Lord of the throne. So this ideology that is being put into the different, we can say, different levels of the people,
that's right.
And this ideology, it also helps. And that's why being a Muslim land, especially in the Islamic revolution of Iran, the achievements that we see, it's because of this ideology. Right.
Thank you very much, Sayyid Mohsen.
Welcome.
For a nice elaboration. And Sayyid Murtaza, thank you very much, brother, too. It was very kind of you, and thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints, which was about the domestic COVID-19 vaccine inside the Islamic Republic of Iran, known as Cove Iran Barakat, a really great achievement for Islamic Republic of Iran. For more information, you can visit our website at parstoday.com/Call of Islam page, also YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi aman.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parstoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye. A symphony of nature.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
The limelight.
The University of Glasgow is coming under fire for censoring critics of the Israeli regime. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Asa Winstanley, writer. This article is published under the heading Scottish College Censors Israeli Regime's Critics. Stay tuned for more. The University of Glasgow is coming under fire for censoring critics of the Israeli regime. Leading academics have accused the Scottish College of undermining scholarship and damaging academic freedom. In an open letter recently, almost 500 high-profile scholars, including the linguist and political analyst Noam Chomsky, demanded that the university withdraw an apology it issued earlier this year for a paper in one of its academic journals. The paper by researcher Jane Jackman detailed the activities of pro-Israeli regime networks in the UK. And this week, the scholar Sandeep Sen pulled out of a talk he had been invited to give at the university on the topics addressed in his book, Decolonizing Palestine. University managers had imposed preemptive conditions, Sen said. Sen and his supporters say that the university attempt to vet his talk. In both cases, the Israeli lobby groups and individuals had complained. Jane Jackman's paper revealed that one of these lobbies, David Collier, has actually trained other pro-Israel campaigners at the Israeli regime embassy in London. In both cases, the university raised the international Remembers the line's bogus definition of anti-Semitism as justification for its censorship. Although widely criticized by scholars and lawyers and rejected by most UK universities, the definition has been pushed by the Zionist regime and its lobby around the world, as well as by the British government. The definition conflates criticism of the Israeli regime and its racist official ideology, Zionism, on the one hand, with anti-Jewish hatred on the other. The article by Jackman examined the Israel lobby propaganda activities in the UK. It was published in a 2017 issue of the university's postgraduate journal, Ishar. Jackman told the Electronic Intifada that the apology would have a chilling effect on researchers. Glasgow's actions is likely to stifle debate where the Israeli regime is concerned, she said. The IHRA definition is making criticism of Israeli regime unsayable, she said. At the time she wrote the article, Jackman was doing PhD research on silencing the Palestinian voice in the UK via pro-Israel groups. Given the subject of her research, there is a deep irony in how she has become just the latest example of such silencing. Glasgow University and Esharp did not respond to requests for comments. Although Jackman's article is still available to be read online, it is now prefaced with an editorial statement apologizing for the considerable offense which the article allegedly caused. The statement alleges failures in scholarship in the paper, including a biased selection of sources and misrepresentation of data which promote an unfounded anti-Semitic theory regarding the regime of Israel and its activity in the United Kingdom. But the apology is not accompanied by any evidence for the claims of bias, errors, or the conclusions being unfounded. The apology also says the journal's current editorial collective has introduced new checks and balances for its articles. But Jackman says her paper was peer-reviewed in the normal manner. To ensure impartiality, the paper was reviewed with her identity being concealed from the reviewer and the reviewer's identity concealed too. Contrary to the statement's unsupported claim of bias sourcing, an analysis of the paper's bibliography by the Electronic Intifada found otherwise. Jackman's article is an examination of how the Israeli regime has mobilized its UK-based assets to promote its interests in order to buttress from below the British government's traditionally staunch support for the Israeli regime and to combat increasing public antipathy to Israel. It explains how British Zionists, both Jewish and non-Jewish, are being mobilized to wage a proxy war for the Israeli regime via digital realm. The article also argues that using false allegations of anti-Semitism to ban criticism of the Israeli regime actually renders Jews more, rather than less, vulnerable to racist abuse. Jackman writes that the definition of anti-Semitism has been extended in such a way as to make critics of the Israeli regime policy and behavior susceptible to spurious charges of anti-Semitic racism. Although the paper was published in 2017, the apology is dated May of this year. It seems to have been triggered by two closely related events. The adoption by the University of the IHRA definition in November 2020 and a lobbying campaign targeting the university's principal initiated by hard-right anti-Palestinian blogger David Collier. As the Electronic Intifada has reported before, Collier has close ties to the Zionist regime. In 2019, he addressed the pro-Israel groups from around the world at an Israeli regime conference, which claimed it would counter the lies of the Palestine Solidarity Movement. Jackman's paper reveals that Collier's links to the Israeli regime are even closer than previously thought. It reveals that in November 2016, Collier spoke at an advocacy training session at the Israeli regime embassy in London for more than 100 Israel lobby groups from across the UK.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.